Welcome to the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin. Joining me is Adam Kugel, Deputy Director and a researcher on Saudi Arabia for Human Rights Watch. Adam, Saudi Arabia has embarked on a program to wean it off petroleum as its sole source of income and sees tourism, particularly in the Red Sea region, as one possibility. As such, it's on a building spree. Word has now come that a member of a tribe being forced to move refused to do so and was shot to death, it said, at the hands of security forces. What can you tell us about it?
They're planning to essentially create a tourism infrastructure out of nothing in a short number of years and lure tourists from other countries to Saudi Arabia, really for the first time. Prior to this, the only tourism in Saudi Arabia was essentially religious tourism to the holy sites. So they're aiming to change that. And part of the plan is NEOM, a city meant to be in the far northwestern corner of the country, right across the water from Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, in the Sinai Peninsula, as well as very close to the Jordanian border, in which they plan to build essentially a large development that will be an engine for high-tech technology development, as well as a major tourism hub. As such, Saudi Arabia has broken ground on the project. They've built a number of staging areas, as well as an airport and some palaces, and they're moving forward on the project in spite of the current economic situation, which is not great in the country. One of the problems that we're seeing now is that, you know, there are several villages in the area, and there are members of various large Saudi families that live there. Probably the largest one is called the Hawaitat tribe. And the government has been forthright that they would like to relocate at least 20,000 of these people away from their villages so they can retake that land for development. And it appears that from our discussions with local Saudi activists, as well as the videos that have been posted to social media, that the authorities have not been clear with residents of the area what the compensation package might be, as well as, you know, what the timeline is and how things are moving forward. This has appeared to create a lot of popular resentment and frustration with the authorities, and genuine fears about losing their homes. And it appears there have been reports, unverified by Human Rights Watch, but nevertheless, there have been reports that many people have been, or at least a group of people have been arrested for protesting online and saying that they don't want to leave their land. And things really boiled over last Monday, the week before last, around 10 days ago, when a man named Abdurrahim Al-Hawaita had been posting videos on social media saying, you know, that he would never leave his land. Then the Saudi authorities came after him with a large security force, which he videoed part of. And subsequently, there was some sort of shootout, or there was some sort of altercation that's unclear, whereby he was shot and killed. And the Saudi authorities claimed that two police officers were also injured. It's unclear exactly what happened in the incident. And the Saudi authorities did post what appeared to be a cache of weapons that the man supposedly had. However, the larger issue still remains about the residents, where they're going to go, what the compensation package is going to look like, and how this is moving forward. And by all accounts, the government appears to create a lot of concern and uncertainty.
You are listening to Adam Kugel, Deputy Director and a researcher on Saudi Arabia for Human Rights Watch. Whatever the circumstances of the death, the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, is not known for understatement. He's the person said to be letting the country's women drive and travel on their own. But then there's the Khashoggi killing in Istanbul, and the mass arrests, including of members of the royal family, ostensibly for corruption. What's going on? Is the heir to the Saudi throne someone who can bring the kingdom into a new era while adhering to human rights?
So in terms of Mohammed bin Salman's early legacy in Saudi Arabia, he is a very interesting figure because he has led at least a partial liberalization in some areas, establishing more gender mixing, entertainment options for young Saudis, really for the first time in many, many years, as well as allowing women to drive and get passports on their own for the first time. And these are really major steps forward and really important developments. He's also really sidelined the conservative religious establishment for now and reduced their influence, which is, you know, something that probably should have happened a long time ago. At the same time, he's been far more repressive than his predecessors, both in terms of sheer numbers, the number of people that have been arrested in his crackdowns, as well as, you know, some of the really terrible and arbitrary practices we've seen, such as, you know, holding people in hotels, reports of rampant torture, in addition to going after family members. The most, of course, notorious incident was the murder of Jamal Khashoggi at the country's consulate in Istanbul. So the Saudi authorities under Mohammed bin Salman have been pursuing kind of a marginally more open social policy while increasing the country's all-out repression and denial of total basic civil and political rights. The way we see this is, you know, they're very explicitly following a UAE model. And the whole thing is predicated on the idea that by allowing some social rights, you basically can then prevent any public criticism and respond very harshly to anyone who dares step out of the line. And that's what's happening in Saudi Arabia today.
Adam Kugel, thank you for joining me at the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin.